Hello and welcome to Healthy Mind, Healthy Life with your host Avik. This podcast is all about exploring the latest research, sharing personal stories and providing personal tips for improving our mental health and well-being. Each episode will be joined by experts in the field of mental health as well as individuals who have experienced the transformative power of a healthy mind firsthand. Together, we will dive into a range of topics from managing stress and anxiety to building resilience and cultivating happiness. So, join us on this journey to discover new ways to take care of our minds, bodies, and souls. And let's work together to create a healthier, happier world one episode at a time. So, let's get started. Hello and welcome to Healthy Mind, Healthy Life. I'm your host Avik, and today we are joined by Major Anthony Bork. So welcome to the show, Major Anthony.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Lovely, lovely. So Major Anthony, like, I'd love to mention this to all of our listeners before we start our conversation today. The dear listeners, Major Anthony is an F-16 fighter pilot turned business leader. So we call it short ABs. So his journey from the skies to the boardroom is nothing short of remarkable. So as a decorated pilot, he flew critical missions worldwide before leveraging his expertise to excel in the mortgage banking industry and later founding Afterburner Seminars, a global training company. Now, he is a CEO of Mark II Consulting, and he shares his insights on peak performance. So why to wait? Let's join us as AB reveals how feedback systems drive continuous improvement in both the cockpit and the corporate world. Lovely. Welcome to the show again, Major Anthony.
Thank you, Avik, and please feel free to call me Anthony or AB. Most people call me AB. AB happens to be my initials, Anthony Burke. Yeah. It is also a way that fighter pilots refer to afterburner. When we want to go really fast, we put the throttle in full afterburner or full AB. So please feel free.
Lovely, lovely. So AB, like, to start with, if you can share a bit about your experience as an F-16 fighter pilot and how it shaped your approach to the continuous improvement. And I believe F-16 is the fifth generation flight.
Yeah, so my life dream at a very early age was to be an F-16 fighter pilot. I thought that would, my father was a fighter pilot. He was also a United Airlines pilot. Mm-hmm. And so by about age 16, I had a fully formed dream, which I wanted to be a 35-year-old F-16 pilot in the reserves, United Airlines captain based in San Francisco, and a bachelor. And that didn't quite work out the way I planned. I actually, my dream got even better when I got married at 27. I had my first child. I was flying the F-4 Phantom on the active duty Air Force. The reserves, the 144th Fighter Wing of the California Air National Guard based in Fresno, California, hired me to fly F-16s. And, you know, you asked about this culture of continuous improvement.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in a fighter squadron, they say you need to have thick skin because there's a culture that says, we think you're talented, we know you're well-trained, but we can make you better. Yeah. And if you'll come in with the right attitude and work hard and be open to feedback every day, we're going to drive this culture of continuous improvement or getting just a little bit better every day. And in a fighter squadron, we primarily do that through a concept that we call debrief. And I know you've read a little bit about that, but I'm happy to talk more about that at the appropriate time.
Sure. Sure, definitely, definitely. So when we're talking about, the continuous growth, so transitioning from military to the business world is not a small feat. So How did you apply the lessons from your military service to drive that growth and the success in the corporate sector?
Yeah, very good question. And it is amazing to me how many military people, primarily people on the active duty, approach me today and ask the same question. It often takes different forms, but it comes down to, hey, B, I don't get it. I mean, if I wasn't driving a tank or shooting a rifle or flying a jet, I don't know what I'd do. I don't have any other skills. I'd probably be selling shoes or flipping hamburgers. I just don't. How did you make the transition to the corporate world? It feels so foreign to me. And I tell them again and again, you have no idea the skill sets you bring as an Air Force officer, an Air Force non-commissioned person, man or woman, Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard. You bring so many skills to the corporate workplace. You are professional. You're trustworthy. You achieve goals. You don't let roadblocks get in the way. You're a good team player and people want to be with you. You would be incredibly successful in the civilian world if you'll just make the leap. And so, you know, this idea of making the leap, I think it is so much like anything. You have to try. And when you do, you have to go all in, not halfway, but all the way. We used to joke that it's very hard to build a full-time business with part-time people. And it's also hard to make a full-time commitment to any transition with just a part-time mindset. And so you have to make that leap. And if you do, and if you open yourself up to what's happening in the civilian world, you can be successful. In my case, I'm not sure I can definitively say why it worked for me, but I'll make two key points. The first was I started applying the tools that I'd learned in the military to my businesses. The discipline, the structure, the way we worked as a team, the way we set objectives, went out and tried to accomplish them, recognizing that it wouldn't always work out, calling time out at the end of the day, the end of the week, the end of the month to debrief and talk about what worked, what didn't, and how can we do it a little bit better tomorrow. All of those tools helped me be successful in business. And then I'm going to add one more thing because I think it's important. We always created a sense of mission in our businesses, meaning we weren't just coming into work, punching a time clock and going home. No, we had a mission. We were trying to take that business somewhere. And the second thing is we always wanted to have a competitor. You know, a lot of people say, well, geez, I'd much rather have a monopoly and just cruise. But in fact, if you don't have a competitor, you don't get up as early in the morning, you don't work as hard, and you don't have somebody to go against. So having a competitor, having another team to play against, if you will, makes you better.
That's very, very important. Yeah, I really love the last one, which you have mentioned, having a competitor. It's really, really important for sure. So in your opinion, what are the essential components of an effective debriefing process, both in the high stakes environments, like flying missions, as you mentioned, in the corporate realm? So what do you say?
Yeah, important elements. I'll take a step back and say fighter pilots have a belief in our core that no matter how good we think we are, no matter how well we plan, no matter how well we're trained, no matter how good our technology is, the fact is at the end of the day or at the end of the mission, no fighter pilot has ever flown the perfect mission. And I think it's fair to say in business that no one in business is ever going to have the perfect day, the perfect week, the perfect month, the perfect client meeting, or the perfect project. And that's why when fighter pilots are done executing our missions, we always, always, always call time out and hold a debrief. So we can learn from both the mistakes and the victories of today's mission, and we can continue to improve as individuals, Certainly as a team, and maybe most importantly, so that as leaders, we can find a way to call time out from time to time, not all the time, but at the appropriate time, take the name tags off our chest, take the rank off our shoulders, create a safe environment where our people will give us the honest real-time feedback we need to keep us ahead of the threats, ahead of the competition, and ahead of the inevitable change that will continue to come our way in business and in combat. So when you get into this idea of how does a debrief work in a fighter squadron, what are the mechanics that make it work? I'll make a couple key points. We often fly in groups of two or four aircraft, sometimes more, but two and four is the basic elements of tactical flying. So when the mission is over, first of all, the debrief is already built into the mission. So before we fly, we sit down and hold a briefing to make sure that the team is aligned, that their minds are right, that we're going to fly in formation and we're going to execute the mission at the highest level, and it's going to be safe. And when we go through that briefing process, one of the things we talk about is when the debrief will occur. So the debrief in my squadron, it's standard that the debrief always occurs 30 minutes after the last airplane lands. So when the mission is over, you don't get to go jump on a conference call. You don't get to go drive home. You know that the debrief is already built into the mission. So that's number one. I don't think you'll ever debrief in business if you don't build the debrief into your schedule, into your cadence. The second point I'll make is, you know, within a flight of two airplanes or four airplanes, we're going to have various degrees of rank. We're a very hierarchical organization. I could be the leader of the mission. I could be a mid-level officer. I've been empowered by leadership to lead that mission, and I will lead the planning, I will lead the briefing, I will lead the flying, and I will lead the debrief. But I could have someone on my wing, number two, who outranks me, a lieutenant colonel, for example. In this case, in this tactical mission, they're going to be the best wingman they can be. I could have my wing commander as number three, somebody that controls my pay, my promotions and demotions, everything about my life. But when they walk into my briefing as number three, they're not going to try to take over and say, okay, AB, I've got it now. No, they're going to be the best wingman they can be. This is how we innovate. This is how we empower young leaders to try things. And now, knowing full well that when the mission is over and we go into this safe environment called debrief, I will be very eager for the feedback from number two and number three to tell me what worked, what didn't, and how can we do it better tomorrow. But unless I'm briefing these people on something that's either going to run them out of gas or get them killed, now is not the time to undermine my plan. Now is time to let me innovate, to try things so we can constantly strive to get better. And then number four in our debrief in my flight might be a brand new second lieutenant, one of the newest pilots in my squadron. Now, Avik, I'm bringing this up because when the door to our debriefing room closes, and I'm saying this literally, so often we debrief face-to-face, but in some cases we debrief over the phone or over a Zoom call. When the door to the debriefing room closes, something magical happens. Name tags come off our chest. They're literally Velcroed on our flight suits. We rip them off. We throw them down on the table. And rank comes off our shoulders. So there is no hierarchy, and the sole purpose of the debrief is simply to learn and to get better.
Wow.
And that's a big cultural difference from what I see in most businesses today. Now, when the debrief is over, Avik, and we walk back out in the hallways, and number three, my wing commander, a two-star general, looks at me and says, you know, Major Burke, I need you to jump. I'm not going to say, well, sir, I want to, you know, debrief that a little bit. No, no, we're back to executing. Yes, sir. How high? What can I do to help you, sir? Now we're back in execution mode. But in this safe environment that we call debrief, everybody has an opinion. Everyone has a voice. And it's all about learning and getting better.
Lovely. That's really, so that means, it gives an option, it gives an open space for the juniors and the mid-level officers to also open up and share their views and because learning has no age, learning has no time as well. Every time, every single time is a learning for us. So that's really, really great thing. Yes.
Really, I think, great. That's a great way to say it. And we have the same thing in the airlines, in the cockpit of an airplane, an airliner like United Airlines or Delta Airlines or your airlines over in India. The captain is in charge. He or she is in charge of the safe conduct of the flight. But all of the rest of the crew is also required to give input so that the captain makes the best possible decisions. We like to say that it's the captain's job to solicit feedback from everyone in the cockpit so that he or she can always make the best decision. And if you are a first officer, if you are a flight attendant, if you are a ground crew person working on the airplane from the outside, it is always your job to provide inputs if you see something that makes you feel uncomfortable or unsafe, so that the captain has all the information to constantly make the best decision. That's also driving a culture of continuous improvement. And more as importantly, it's keeping us all safe.
Lovely. That's really lovely. This is very, very true. So what advice would you give to the individuals or the organizations who are looking to implement or improve their debriefing processes for the continuous growth?
Yeah. So if you're a business organization that loves this idea of debrief, open and honest feedback at the appropriate time, I'm going to encourage you to do two things. First, build debrief into your mission, if you will. Whether you build a briefing every morning at 8 a.m. before starting work so that the team starts off aligned and flying in formation, and a debrief every day at 4 p.m. before everyone gets home. Hey, this morning we said we would accomplish A, B, and C. How are we doing? Are we winning? Are we losing? Are we neutral? What did we learn? And what can we do better or differently tomorrow? Maybe you don't do this daily. Maybe you do it weekly, Monday morning at 8 a.m., Friday afternoon at 4 p.m. for the debrief. Maybe you brief and debrief around key customer meetings and events. Maybe you brief and debrief around key initiatives or key projects or key jobs in your business. The point I want to make is if you don't build your debrief into the plan, if you don't put it on your Outlook calendar so it's there, it's not going to happen. Because we're all too busy. We have got too much going on. So first point is build your debrief into your schedule. Schedule in advance. The second point I'll make is debrief is cultural. So this really starts at the top. And as a leader, you need to be the first one in the group to feel comfortable to, I call it, unzipping the flight suit and opening your chest for daggers. Set a tone in your debrief so for that 15 or 20 minutes, people know the debrief is safe. So that might sound something like this. Hey, team, for the next 15 minutes, we're going to debrief about the sales call we just made with our client. I want to remind you that the debrief is all about learning and getting better. So I'm going to give you some honest feedback. I hope you'll do the same for me. I can't be a good leader without your honest feedback. And I want to remind you, what's said in the debrief stays in the debrief. This is simply about learning and getting better and making sure that we're improving every day. Find a way as a leader to set the tone so your people know that in the debrief, it's safe, even though outside of the debrief, you may have to go back to a much more hierarchical structure.
True. Well, That's really great. Great learning, I would say. Yeah. So looking ahead, what do you see as the future of debriefing practices, particularly in the context of evolving the technologies and remote work environments? What do you say?
I think debrief, in this world where AI is coming so fast and furious, and nobody, I mean, the brightest minds in the world, the Elon Musks and his counterparts aren't sure exactly where AI is going to take us. And I think we can say that about a lot of technology, making time to debrief about what's working, what's not, and how we can continue to steer this new technology for the good of mankind and prevent it from taking mankind down is just so critical. I'm not saying that we don't want our people working hard towards goals, but from time to time, we've got to call time out and say, you know, is this working? Is it not? Is it safe? Are we developing products that are for the good of mankind? Or are we going down a path that maybe isn't so healthy and we need to shift course? So I think debrief today in business, particularly in technology, but really in almost any business, is critical to adapting to a really rapidly changing world.
Wow. Lovely, lovely. Great. So thanks, thanks, AV, for sharing your expertise, your insights, and your knowledge. It really means a lot. And for the listeners, I would love to mention that, remember, excellence isn't a kind of destination. It's a journey of the continuous learning and the adaptation. So by embracing the principles discussed today and incorporating the effective debriefing practices into our personal and the professional lives, we can all strive for the greater heights of the achievement and the fulfillment. So join us next time as we delve into more strategies and the stories that inspire excellence. And until next time, keep unpacking the excellence in every aspect of your life. So till then, thank you so much.